Well, welcome to the Baylor Conversation Series. We have an exciting program ahead for you. First off, let's recognize a few folks. If you're with the university from Waco, please stand. We want to welcome you to Houston. All of our Waco, there we go. Thank you. And I believe we have a pretty full contingency of regents here tonight. If you're a current or former regent of the university, please stand. We'd love to welcome you as well. Thank you. We're here tonight to listen to a conversation between our brand new president and the chairman of the Board of Regents of the university. On the state of the university. But before we get started, I want to ask Bill Mears, the chairman of the Baylor Business Network of Houston, to lead us in a word of prayer.
Father, we thank you for this opportunity to gather as family and friends of Baylor University. We thank you for the fact that Baylor has had such a positive impact and influence on the lives in this room, within our state, across our nation, and indeed around the world. We come to you tonight to seek your wisdom and discernment as we confirm and implement the unique vision and mission that you've given Baylor University. And in so doing, Father, we ask that you would bless the Board of Regents, Dr. Livingstone and her administration as they seek to lead effectively and with integrity. We ask that you bless the faculty such that their teaching and research will change lives. We pray for our students so that they would grow spiritually as well as intellectually. And we pray for the alumni and friends that we may be steadfast and generous in our support and commitment to the university. Father, may Baylor's light shine brighter than ever before in the days ahead. For it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Allow me to introduce our stage party for the evening. Let me start with Ms. Lori Fogelman. Lori is the Assistant Vice President for Media Communications for the university. She's been with the university for over 20 years, but where you'll really recognize her is that she recently just retired. Her last game was the last game that we played. Her last game, she was the radio voice of the Lady Baylor Bears basketball team. Welcome, Ms. Lori Fogelman.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mr. Joel Allison. Joel is the chairman of the Board of Regents of the university. Joel spent 40 years in the healthcare industry and most recently was the CEO of the Baylor Healthcare System for 17 years. The capstone of Joel's career was the merger of Baylor Healthcare and Scott and White Hospital System. They formed that merger, which he led for the final year. That merger was in 2013. He led that organization up until 2017 when he retired. It is the largest not-for-profit healthcare system in the state of Texas. Joel and his lovely wife, Diane, who is here. Where are you, Diane? There we go. Joel and his lovely wife, Diane, upon their retirement, moved back to the promised land, to Waco. Ladies and gentlemen, meet the hardest working retired person you'll ever want to meet, Mr. Joel Allison, chairman of the Board of Regents of the University. There's no one I would rather introduce and have more pride in introducing than the new president of our university. Chairman Allison and I had the privilege of serving on the Presidential Search Committee, and I know Joel would agree with me that we had a front row seat to see the hand of God at work. That committee prayed fervently on our knees consistently that God would deliver to Baylor University an unapologetic Christian leader. And boy, did he deliver. Every box was checked in big, bold check marks. In the final meeting of the regents, and none of you regents get nervous. I'm not going to reveal anything we shouldn't. But in the final meeting of the regents, all of the interviews had been finished. The door was closed, and it was time to vote. One of our prominent regents stood up, and this is a gentleman whose career would show that he has the ability to recognize great talent when he sees it. He stood up and said, if you want to elect a president that's going to kind of keep us right in the fairway, it's going to maintain the status quo, don't hire Linda Livingstone. But he said, if you want somebody that's going to disrupt the status quo, that's going to make changes, that's going to take this university to the prominence that it deserves, then Dr. Linda Livingstone is the man for the is the lady. I can't tell you how many times during committee meetings I would say man.
I heard you got reprimanded a time.
I did. Consistently. But this regent's words had never been truer. When Dr. Livingstone took office back in June, she hit the ground running with breakneck speed. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome the 15th president of Baylor University, Dr. Linda Livingstone.
Thank you.
Lori, all yours.
Thank you very much, Bob, and most appropriate that he would be the one to introduce Dr. Livingstone. I think it was almost a year ago, I think April 18th.
With the announcement, yes.
That's right, right after Easter weekend when Dr. Livingstone was named Baylor's 15th president. So, Mr. Bruton, thank you so much. We appreciate your time and those kind introductions. This is the Baylor Conversation Series, our inaugural conversation series, and we have taken this show on the road and had the opportunity to meet with alumni and friends to give a state of the university and to offer the opportunity for you to ask any questions that may not be a part of the conversation tonight. We have been in Fort Worth and in Dallas. We have also been in Waco, and we have future cities scheduled for Austin. We'll be in Denver, Atlanta, also several stops in California, and we plan to be in Washington, D.C. this summer as well. So the Baylor Conversation Series, a very candid and enjoyable conversation. And we do want to let you know that audio from tonight's conversation is being recorded, and it will be posted on the Baylor President's website. So that's baylor.edu/president, and then you just go to the conversations link, and you can listen to this and other conversations as well. But let's go ahead and get to our conversation tonight. And Dr. Livingstone, we talked about how you've almost been at Baylor, I guess the announcement of you as Baylor's president since about a year ago. Why don't you characterize your first semester and a half at Baylor University, and then what would you say about the current state of affairs at Baylor?
Sure. No, I appreciate it. And let me begin by just thanking you all for being here and for taking the time to come out and learn more about Baylor and just to be great supporters of what we're accomplishing. It has been almost a year since the announcement, April 18th. Two interesting things about that for Houston might be important. One, I was actually in Houston when I got the call offering me the job. I had interviewed in Dallas on a Saturday morning, flew down here because my daughter, who plays volleyball at Rice, had knee surgery at Methodist Hospital. So I was with her, and I got the call that afternoon. So it was sort of a big weekend for the family after that. And then the 18th was the announcement. And, you know, it has been, I started on June 1st officially. It has been just a great ride for me and for my family. We have had so much fun being back at Baylor after being away for 15 years. And really, I look back, we're kind of in the process now of beginning to summarize what we've accomplished for the year that I will share with the board in May. And it's amazing all that we've gotten done, and you'll hear about a lot of that this evening. But You know, I started by doing a lot of listening. We're still trying to do a lot of listening with the community, both on and off campus, and was reminded about how much people love Baylor, even as we've gone through difficult times and want to help us to get better. And for that reason, we're a very strong and resilient institution, even through difficult times. And I think there's also some things that have illustrated that in very concrete ways this year. Our fall enrollment was very strong. We had a class of 3,300, which is what we had wanted and anticipated. After you go through very difficult times, particularly from a PR perspective, your enrollment can be challenged at times. Our application pool last year was the largest we had ever had. Our pool for this coming fall is very strong as well. We're shooting for a class of about 3,400 again. We anticipate hitting that. That class right now is tracking to be our most academically qualified class ever this fall, after having two classes in a row that were our most academically qualified ever. In fact, this coming Saturday, we have what we call Premier. Some of you have probably been there with your children, where we bring prospective students to campus from freshmen through juniors and seniors. And we were going to do a promo push, what, last week and this week, to really ensure that we had a good turnout. We actually have so many people coming on Saturday, we had to cancel that marketing campaign because we were afraid we were going to have too many students on campus that we couldn't actually accommodate them in the way we want to at Baylor. So a tremendous amount of interest in the university. People know that we're a unique and special place, and they're very interested in coming there, the students and their parents. So enrollment is very strong, and we feel very good about that. We had fundraising success last year. We raised over $100 million for the sixth year in a row. And so again, people, even through some of our difficult times, have been willing to continue to work with and support the institution. We're on track to have a very similar year, if not better, this year. So we're tracking about where we were last year. So that's a very, very good sign. And then, of course, this year we were able to complete the external audit of the 105 recommendations from the Pepper Hamilton report around the sexual violence issues. And it was great to get that external report of that. SAC COC, our regional accrediting body, lifted the warning, and we actually have the SAC's committee coming in next week to do our regular accreditation review that we do every 10 years. So lots of really positive signs, both in terms of just people's perspectives and what they're thinking about Baylor, but also some very concrete signs that things are going well. And then we'll talk more about it later, but lots of good work on our academic strategic plan. So we're looking forward as well in ways that are very positive for the university.
And we will talk a little bit more about that and look forward to hearing a little bit more details and specifics about those plans. But before we get into the details, Chairman Allison, what was the overall response to the academic strategic plan from the Board of Regents? You had a checkpoint in February on the plan, and are there one or two things that maybe stood out to you?
Thank you, Lori, and let me also say thank you to you all for being here this evening. As Dr. Livingstone said, we appreciate your time, we appreciate your support for Baylor, and we just appreciate you all being present this evening. And Bob, thank you for your kind introduction, and thank you for the great leadership you provided with the search committee. You did an outstanding job, and we thank you so much for that. And we've been excited as a board to hear from Dr. Livingstone on her vision about the future of Baylor University and the strategic plan. And as was mentioned, we kind of got a first review of it in our last meeting in February. We will see a more complete draft of it in May, next month, at our board meeting. We had a great discussion. The board is very enthusiastic about what Dr. Livingstone and her team are putting together with that academic strategic plan. We had a lot of dialogue about it, a lot of discussion. We had a dinner one evening with the deans to just do some more dialogue and get ideas from the board. And so we're really excited, and it allows us as a board to do what a board should be doing. One of its responsibilities is to look at strategy, to be strategic, and look to the future. And this is something that we're very excited about because it gives us an opportunity to be the board and do what a board should be doing, looking for an organization's future, being strategic, and hearing from the president and the staff about how we are going to go forward with this wonderful, as you'll hear more about it from Dr. Livingstone, this wonderful academic strategic plan. So Dr. Livingstone, I want to tell you right now, has complete support of the Board of Regents. She's doing a fabulous job. She's 24/7, like Bob said, and she's very engaged, and so she has tremendous support from the Board of Regents as she continues to move forward. The questions we asked about the strategic plan had nothing to do about the vision. It was just more of getting some more of the details and how it would align with budget and things of those of that nature.
All right. Well, let's dive into it a little bit if we can. The academic strategic plan, important to Baylor as we move forward. What can you tell us as members of the Baylor family, especially at this point, about the plan?
Well, so we're really excited about the work that's been going on. We've had spent tremendous hours over the last 9 or 10 months putting together the academic strategic plan. Let me give a little context for it. 5 years ago, the university launched a vision called Pro Futurus. And in that vision, it talks about Baylor being a preeminent Christian research university and really moving up among kind of the most academically recognized institutions in this country. And so for the last 5 years, the university has worked on that, but they've worked primarily on kind of the operational side of it and the student success side, which was very important. So we've worked to increase graduation rates, retention rates, you know, quality of the student body, metrics that are very important to the success, particularly of our undergraduates. And we have made great progress on those metrics and have moved most of them to where we wanted them to be in that five-year window. Well, now, as I came in, we began to revisit what did Pro Futurus ask us to do. And part of what Pro Futurus asked us to do was to really ramp up our academic quality from a research and scholarly perspective. And so what we're working on now is an academic strategic plan for the second 5 years of Pro Futurus that focuses on continuing to work on those student success measures, but then also looks at how do we build our academic reputation, how do we grow our scholarly and research activity in a way that helps our reputation, helps us to have a more significant voice in higher education as probably one of the only, if not the only, Christian research university in the country. And so that's what we've been working on. And we have four kind of foundational principles that are guiding what we're doing with the plan. One, we will continue to focus on transformational undergraduate education. That is the heart and soul of Baylor. It is what we do very well. Many of you experience that yourselves. Many of you have children that have or are experiencing that. That will continue to be core to the plan. Second, we are going to build out and enhance our research and scholarly efforts in support of our faculty, and then that will also involve growing some of our graduate programs. And in that, we also will look at how does growing our research footprint actually enhance and give more opportunities to our undergraduate students and make that an even richer undergraduate learning experience. Third, we will continue to compete at the highest levels in our athletic program. It's a wonderful platform for us when we do it right, and we will do it right, and we will continue to emphasize that in the right ways as we go forward. And then final and most importantly, the plan ensures that we continue to enhance the integrity of our Christian mission as a university. That's core to who we are, and we believe that we can be one of the top academic institutions in the country and maintain the integrity of our Christian mission, and that's going to be our focus. Kind of the next level from there, what the plan will include is academic strategies, and we're really focusing on kind of five thematic areas where we already have strength as a university and where we know that putting some additional resources to bear can really help move us forward significantly. Those areas are data sciences, material sciences, health. We have huge footprints in health in many different ways, both in research and in programs, in human flourishing, and then also in Baylor in the Americas. We have such a link into Latin America. We have probably 50 or 60 faculty doing research in that area. So we are building out initiatives in those areas around academic programs, research, that will really help us grow in those areas and build our reputation. We then will have a financial plan to support that. That plan will include maintaining a fairly consistent level of undergraduate enrollment. We are not going to grow undergraduate enrollment or increase tuition dramatically in order to fund these initiatives and these aspirations. We will fund those aspirations through the growth of some graduate and professional programs, through fundraising, through increasingly doing more funded research. So we have a financial model that will support those aspirations without doing it on the backs of undergraduate tuition. We will have a facilities plan that builds out academic facilities in support of the plan. And then we will have a comprehensive fundraising campaign because we have to grow our endowment. We have to grow our fundraising base in order to support these aspirations. So we're calling the plan Illuminate because in Matthew 15, we are called to be light to the world and to share that light with others. And this is a tremendous opportunity for us to be a light to the world in an important way that no other university can. And so we're excited about it. We've had great engagement and participation across campus in the process. And we look forward to the May board meeting where we can provide more details to the board and then begin to work on the actual implementation of the plan.
All right, thank you, Dr. Livingstone. It's great also just to hear a little more detail about it, as well as the commitment to undergraduate education. I mean, that's a hallmark of Baylor education, and that will remain unchanged. One area that has seen some extensive changes, Chairman Allison has been in the Board of Regents. Even with the slate of governance reforms that have been undertaken over the past year, there are some non-negotiables. So can you explain that to us?
Sure, thank you. We realized a couple of years ago, the Board of Regents, that we need to go through some governance reform, as Lori mentioned. And we had a governance reform task force appointed, and we had three regents appointed to it. The chair was a non-regent, Greg Brenneman. Doug Beck is here, I know, was also on that committee, and they brought those forward. And in that, we started looking at how we as a board should function as a board. And basically, it came down that we have three specific responsibilities as a board of a, what we'd call a high-performing organization. Number one is a fiduciary responsibility, which is the oversight. Number two, as we talked earlier, is about the strategic responsibility and to look to the future and foresight. And the third is generative, as to really kind of give an insight where Dr. Livingstone is able to pull from the Board of Regents the best insight on looking at some of the issues that we need to face from the external environment that are going to be facing higher education over the years. And so as we went through the reforms, we began this past year implementing those governance and structural changes, we came up, and Dr. Livingstone and I have agreed that we have a process by which we kind of make decisions going forward as a board and as her management team. And we call them the four non-negotiables. And so whenever a decision comes to us, we ask ourselves, number one, will this decision that we make keep Baylor a Christ-centered university? Number two, will it stay true to the mission of Baylor University? Number three, if we make this decision, will it reflect the core values and convictions of Baylor University as a Baptist Christian university? And then number four, if we make this decision, is it the right thing to do for the right reason? And we believe if we can look at the screen on any decision that says, and we can say yes, 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 we believe we will make good decisions going forward. And Dr. Livingstone and I have talked about the role of the board, the role of management. We want to make sure that we are functioning as a board, that the responsibilities of the board are kept at that high level, to 30,000-foot view, and decisions are really made in accordance with our four non-negotiables. And the same with, I know, with her management team as she brings forward recommendations to the board. But it was a good process to go through. And we've been able this past year, this is our first full year coming up in May, of putting in the restructuring, and it's very, very positive going forward. And the board's working very well together.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Allison. Dr. Livingstone, let's turn to some legal issues. Can you give us an update on the legal front and also investigations?
Sure.
And when do we think we might get some resolution to those in the future?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you see in the paper periodically some perspectives on some of the lawsuits we're dealing with and some of the investigations. So let me provide a little bit of an update. We have five active lawsuits right now with 17 individuals engaged in those lawsuits. And so what we've learned through this process is that, you know, different victims need different ways to resolve these cases. And so we're really working with the victims and their lawyers to work through that. Some need some kind of a resolution where we settle a lawsuit and reach an agreement on what that settlement is that helps them for healing and closure. And some of them, it may actually be taking that lawsuit all the way through the court system. So we're working through those different lawsuits. We We do have a couple of court dates set and a couple of those further out into next year. The case you hear the most about is what we call Jane Doe's 1 through 10. And that one's gotten a lot of attention over procedural kinds of issues. There are the plaintiff's attorneys would like to bring in a lot of health and counseling records of students who are not parties to the lawsuit, either complainants or respondents in the particular cases. And so what we're doing is trying to work to protect the privacy of our students who are not not involved in the lawsuit. And so that's why you're seeing so much back and forth on that particular case, because there's just a lot of legal arguments going back and forth. But we will continue to work with those cases. We anticipate it'll be probably the next year and a half to 2 years before we bring all of those to closures, but we're certainly doing everything we can to work with the victims and their attorneys to bring those to closures as soon as possible. We also have several investigations that are going on. The Big 12 is withholding funds from us until they have sort of certified that we've completed the 105 recommendations. So we have had that certification from an outside Cozen O'Connor, an outside law firm that has given us a very extensive audit of those to say we have completed them. That audit is actually online if you have any desire to read it. It's, I think, over 700 pages total, about 175 pages of actual audit, and then a lot of appendices. So the Big 12 is doing their own audit and have brought in outside folks. We are continuing to work very closely with them. We have a few minor things that we need to bring to closure with them that we hope we can do fairly soon. So we think of all of those kind of investigations that are out there, that one is likely to come to closure sooner than some of the others. We have several things going on with the Department of Education through the Office of Civil Rights and related to the Clery Act. The Clery Act is where you have to report crimes that happen on your campus. And so there's some investigations going on there. Those can take, Clery Act cases have sometimes taken up to 3 to 4 years to resolve. It could potentially be the longest of all of them. We are getting some signals in the sort of new education department that they're trying to find ways to bring resolution to both the OCR cases and the Clery cases in a more efficient manner. And so we're hopeful that those might resolve a little bit quicker than they have in the past. But again, we're being cooperative. We're providing them with all the information that they need so that we can try to do everything we can to bring them to closure sooner rather than later. The NCAA has been investigating to see if we've violated any NCAA rules. And so again, we're cooperating. We're providing them access to the people and the information that they need. And so we aren't sure when we'll sort of hear a response back from them. They're still doing some investigation at this point in time. But again, hopefully within the next year, that one will be brought to closure in some form or fashion. And then the other one is the Texas Rangers. And that's a criminal investigation. And that one kind of ebbs and flows. But again, we're providing them with all the information they need and that they've requested. And again, we hope we'll get some kind of signaling and messaging from them before too long. But those are kind of the main ones that are out there. And we're doing everything we can to be responsive and to provide information so that we can begin to close out as many of those as possible in the coming year to 18 months or so.
All right. And Mr. Allison, over the weekend, the Dallas Morning News had reported on some legal settlements between Art Briles and Ken Starr and Ian McCaw and Baylor University as a result of Baylor's IRS Form 990, which is posted on the Baylor website. I imagine that there are several in our audience here who would like to know a little bit more about the situation. What can you tell us in light of confidentiality agreements that have been made in this case?
And in light of the confidentiality agreements, let me just say, number one, the Board of Regents stands behind and by the personnel decisions that were made. They were not easy. It was a very difficult time. They were hard decisions. Many times boards have, on behalf of their organizations for its future, have to make tough decisions. So we made the decision to make those changes. We also wanted to make other changes throughout the organization. But we felt like at the time, rather than go into a long, protracted litigation, which it could be, and you've seen that, and are seeing it in some other universities, that for the health and for what's best for Baylor University, for our students and our faculty, we needed to get those settled and be able to move on. Those dollars came out of reserves. They've been paid. will not have any financial impact in a negative way on the university or its finances. It will also not have to be borne by the students, will not go in the tuition side. So again, it was a very difficult time. Very hard decisions were made, a lot of prayer. But again, it was time to make those agreements settle and move forward.
All right, thank you for the update, Mr. Allison. And let's go back to campus now,
okay.
Dr. Livingstone, and let's talk about what you introduced about a year ago when you became president, Strong, Secure, Strategic. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an update and the university's progress in those areas nearing a one-year mark?
Yeah. So when I first arrived last summer, I began to work with the board and then with my leadership team to identify goals for this coming year. What were the things we needed to be spending our time and energy and effort on that would be in the best interest of moving Baylor forward to accomplish our mission and to move the university forward? And so in the context of that, we developed a set of goals that are categorized in these three areas, strong, secure, and strategic. And so we have six or seven goals in each of those areas. We're actually working on a document, and at some point this spring we'll probably make it public for everyone, that speaks to very specifically what we've done in all of those areas. But let me hit just a few highlights of that. In regards to strong, the primary focus of that area was strengthening the leadership of the institution in a way that provides us with the right people, the right structure to move forward successfully. You don't have the right leadership in place, you can't be successful as an organization. A piece of that was the work that the board has done to restructure, to work on governance, to work on how we select new board members. That's been really important, and those have been implemented this year. The other piece was leadership on campus among my leadership team. And so I've done some restructuring of that team. It's a bit smaller team than it used to be. We have two really key positions that we're in the process of filling. Our provost, our chief academic officer, we are in a national search for that position. We're in the next month to 6 weeks, we're going to be bringing some finalists on campus for that position. And then the other position is, it's been a chief operating officer position. We're kind of reformulating it into a chief business officer position. And we are, again, doing a national search. We will begin, I think, our first candidate for that is on campus next week. So we'll be bringing in three or four candidates for that position as well. So hopefully, if all goes well, please pray that we find just the right person in both of those searches. Hopefully, by the time we get to the board meeting, they won't be on board, but we will know or be very close to knowing who we're going to be bringing in those two positions so they can join us this summer. So those will be critical for us. They will kind of round out my leadership team so that when we get ready to work on implementation of the strategic plan, we have the full team to do that. We have a couple of other positions. One, we integrated our advancement and development area with alumni relations, and so we're looking for someone to lead our alumni relations area. And then we also have an external relations position that's going to really help us work, particularly in Waco and in our local region, to help ensure that we have strong relationships and are bridging well with our local community. So those positions we hope to have filled in the next month or so as well. In regard to secure, it's really about financial and operational security of the institution. I talked some about financial security. We're in a very strong position financially and have been very fortunate through all that's happened to remain that way. But we're also working on, you know, the climate on our campus. Clearly, all the work we've done on the Pepper Hamilton recommendations is a part of that safe and secure campus environment. But also, we released the results of two surveys this year, a climate survey on diversity on our campus and a climate survey around sexual assault, sexual violence issues on our campus. Those were both released before Christmas. Those are on our website if you'd like to look at them. Now what we're doing is really studying the results of those and coming up with what are the specific things we need to continue to do and do more of or better in both of those areas to continue to ensure that we have a climate on our campus that is safe, secure, that's inviting and engaging for everybody that's a part of our community. So those were important in terms of security of our campus operationally and fiscally. And then the last area is strategic. And so the big thing there has been the work we're doing on the academic strategic plan, which we have talked about. And that planning phase will hopefully kind of wrap up in May, and then we can begin the implementation phase. And then we'll work on another set of goals for next year that will really be focused on the implementation of that strategic plan. The other thing I would say about that, we had a couple of foundational goals as well in addition to those. And one of those was to really work on healing and reconciliation in our family, given all that's gone on over the last several years. And this conversation series is a part of that. We're working on how we communicate more often, more transparently, both with the board and with our administrative team. And so that sort of flows through everything that we're doing is how we engage with the community in more and better ways than we have in the past.
Well, one thing that has been exciting, and this is our last question, by the way, and we'll get to Q&A here in a few minutes, but exciting on our campus, and you've probably seen this if you've seen some billboards throughout Houston or you've shopped at any of the Houston area malls. Baylor has a new marketing campaign called Where Lights Shine Bright. Mm-hmm. I love the fact it was worked into the prayer today.
Yes.
So very meaningful to Baylor University. Can you tell us a little bit about that campaign and how it's just energized our campus?
Right. Well, one of the other kind of foundational goals in our goals for this year was about sort of reintroducing Baylor to the community, given all that we've been through. We kind of had lost control of the narrative about Baylor, and so we knew we needed to tell our story better because there is so much good going on at Baylor, and we have so many fine students and faculty and staff doing interesting things. And so out of that conversation came this theme of light, and tied back to the scripture in Matthew that I referenced earlier about us being light to the world. And out of that came this campaign, Light Shine Bright. And I love it on so many levels. It is a ton of fun. We've done lights at basketball games. If you've been at, we had light sticks and light bracelets, and we've got signage on campus that lights up at night and you can take pictures with it. My daughter even had me get on my husband's shoulders so I could be the eye. We could be the eye in lights, which was like, really, you should never do that at our age. The things we do for our children, right? And we've got benches lit up on campus. So it's been a lot of fun because you can do so many interesting things with light. But on a much, much deeper level, we are one of the only universities in the country that can talk about how we need to be light in the darkness. And there's a lot of darkness in the world, and we need to bring light into that in a way that no other institution in higher education is going to do. And one of the things we've been doing is really promoting a lot our faculty and our students and our staff as lights, and the things that they're doing individually in groups to bring light to the world, the way our faculty research is bringing light to the scholarly world and to the practical world. And one of the things I've enjoyed so much, Lori, is I get emails now from our faculty and our staff and our students, and they'll send me pictures that they took where they're talking about being light, or they'll tell me a story about something that they've done that they think is light to the world. And so it's really become, I can't even tell you how many times I'm in events, whether it's like this or on campus, and people use the phrases around light and around being light. So it has really become embedded very quickly in a unique way in our culture. So it's fabulous. We're having great fun with it. And it will continue to live on because we are calling the strategic plan Illuminate, our comprehensive campaign that we'll launch next fall. Our fundraising campaign will be called Give Light. And so we will continue to use that theme and that imaging in the months ahead for the important things that we're working on.
So if you see the Where Lights Shine Bright in the mall and take a picture to send that to me.
Send it to me. Yeah,
okay.
I would love that.
We got it. Okay.
Hashtag Lights Shine Bright. Is that right? Or Baylor Lights.
Hashtag
Baylor Lights. That's
there you go. All right. Well, thank you so much for the conversation. And before we get into the Q&A, Mr. Allison, any concluding words this evening?
Just to say thank you again for being here. And we are so grateful to have Dr. Livingstone on board doing a great job. As Bob mentioned, I was 40 years in healthcare field, and I thought it was the most complicated, regulated industry in the country. I was wrong. Totally wrong. Academics is. And Dr. Livingstone's doing a great job leading us through these next several years with her vision. We still have some heavy lifting to do, I tell people, but the board is working very well together, supporting Dr. Livingstone. It's a very exciting time at Baylor. And we are very enthusiastic about the vision that she has set forth and that we'll hear more about in May. And we just ask as we go forward that you will continue to remember our students, our faculty, our Dr. Livingstone, her staff, the board. Keep us in your prayers because the way we'll get through a lot of this moving forward is with a lot of humility and a lot of prayer. And I am very excited about what I see for the future of Baylor, and that truly we have, I think, our best days are ahead of us. A lot of enthusiasm on the campus, and I think what we have to stay focused on, and this is something we have in front of our every region at our place, is the mission of Baylor University. And we cannot ever forget what our mission is, and it's around our students, and that's why we're there, and that's why you're here. It's because it's for our students, and we can never lose sight of that. And as long as we keep focused on that, Baylor's going to continue to do extremely well, and we are going to see a continual light in the world. As Dr. Livingstone says so well, there is a need for a university like Baylor in the world today, and she's going to lead us there. So thank you all again for being with us, and thank you. And we're looking forward to the Q&A and anything that we didn't touch on or you want to ask. Please feel free to do that.
All right. Well, thank you for the candid conversation here today. And we will take your questions now. And we do have the microphones here. So if you have a question, if you don't mind raising your hand, and we'll bring you the microphone. And if you will identify yourself to us so we may call you by your name. So thank you very much. Anybody have questions? We have one right here.
Thank you, Toby. My name is Chris C. I'm a Baylor alum.
You're a pastor.
I'm a pastor here in town.
I've actually been to your church and visited here.
I'm probably most proud to be a father of a current Baylor Bear, Hannah C. She's a sophomore. And it's hard for me, probably like most of us, to pick my favorite thing about Baylor. You know, I love that we're a part of an institution that's uniquely Christian, and yet we're not afraid of facts. We're not afraid of science. We're ready to embrace the world in the public domain. But I think for me, what made Baylor most unique, when I talk to other friends, is the sense, and I'm curious your experience as a faculty member, Dr. Livingstone, that I have faculty members that really believed in me. I mean, they put everything behind wanting me to succeed. Our former president, Dr. Reynolds, somehow found out I was preaching my first sermon when I was a student and came and put a $100 bill in my pocket afterwards. And so I don't know if you have any of those on you. But we could take an offering.
That's a high bar.
But he literally, he just, you know, he said very clearly, like, I believe in you. And I knew from the president on down that every person on that faculty believed in me. And I still don't know how we find those faculty members. Like, how do they end up at Baylor? And how do we ensure going forward that we keep finding those kind of candidates, especially given the problems that we've had in recent years, and attracting the kind of people that at the end of the day, it's that undergraduate experience that makes it so magical. So I'm curious, thinking through how we continue to be that kind of university.
Sure. No, I appreciate that, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the heart and soul of being a Christian university is the faculty that you have. And if you hire the right faculty, you will maintain the integrity of your Christian mission independent of anything else, and appreciate your ministry here. You've done some really wonderful and innovative things in Houston, and it's making a huge difference in this community. You know, when we hire faculty, we have a really rigorous process where faculty go through their departments all the way up through the provost office, and, you know, we're screening them. Are they a good teacher? Are they doing interesting, high-quality research? But we screen them very carefully on Christian mission. Mission fit is a term we sometimes use. To try to ensure that they're committed Christians, that they're engaged in their church community. Many of them come from secular PhD programs and secular universities, so they haven't ever been at a place where they've had the opportunity to sort of think about how their faith informs their work or their scholarship or their teaching. And so sometimes it's a little hard for them to think about that and articulate it when we're hiring, particularly if they're fairly new faculty. But what we find is a lot of faculty are thrilled to find a place that is academically rigorous, that cares about their scholarship and cares about their faith, and lets them think about that in the context of the research and teaching that they do. And so, you know, a lot of people think you can't be a preeminent Christian research university because you can't find the faculty to do it. And that's one of the biggest questions people have. And, you know, we've had really good luck. I mean, we just hired a husband-wife team from Oregon State in engineering. They're exceptional scholars, and they are, like, on fire for Christ. I mean, I can't even tell you. Every time I see them, they're just, like, going on about the stuff they're doing with students and how excited they are to get to talk about their faith on campus. And so it's harder to find those people, but they are out there. And if they know there's a place where they can come and do their work at a really high quality level and live out their faith, it's a draw for a certain set. And the better we get academically, the more we build that reputation, the more we're going to draw that sort of faculty. You have to look harder for them. They, you know, they don't have billboards out in front of their offices telling you that they're Christian faculty. So you really have to network and you have to go find them. But we're really, I think, doing a good job of finding them and bringing them in, and we'll have to continue to work to do that. But you're absolutely right. It's the core of what we do, and it's really critical.
Thank you, Chris. Other questions? We've got one there and then one back here.
Hi there. I'm Bo. I graduated in 2007, and since about that time, Baylor's gone from around $200 million in debt to over $600 million in debt. And so I'm curious kind of what direction we're going as far in an era of rising interest rates, mm-hmm. where we're going in that regard.
Yeah. And Larry Hurd, where's Larry Hurd? He's our finance and facilities chair of the board. So if I misspeak about anything, you can correct me or add anything to it. So you're absolutely right. That was done primarily as we built the football stadium and the Foster campus. And so we do not have plans to take on any significant debt in the coming years. We've got to buy down that debt. Our bond rating, though, is very high and has maintained strength through that. The fact our enrollment has been strong the last couple of years has been very positive. We just had those bond ratings revisited and reaffirmed at a very high level. We just did a refinancing of some bonds to bring down our rates, which was actually very helpful as well. And then that's why going forward, we know to fund what we need to do, we've got to raise money to do it, and we've got to grow our endowment. Facilities that we want to build, we're going to have to raise money for those. We're not going to go out and borrow to do that. So we have a great finance team on campus. We've got a really strong finance and facilities committee of the board, and they're very attuned to and prudent about what we do financially. It's why we've been able to get through the last couple of years financially in very solid format and haven't had to have any budget cuts or anything like that, because there's been very prudent management of the resources. So is that,
yes,
I don't know, Larry, if I missed anything there that I should add.
And I would concur. And one of the things I've been impressed with on the board, and particularly in with the work of the Finance Facilities Committee, has been the way they've managed the balance sheet. They do a great job of managing the balance sheet for the university to keep us at a good rating and also to keep the asset base strong against any debt that we have.
I would also say our cash position is strong. We watch that very, very closely as well. And so our cash position is very strong, too.
We had another question back here.
Yeah, thank you for the insights, Bill Arend. I wanted a question about student life. I've got daughters, and I've got a son, and I had an amazing experience. Went to Baylor to play basketball, try out, and got cut. And then the next thing I know, I'm part of a fraternity that was life-changing for me. I have friends that I've been with for 30 years that I see every year. So student life's really an important part of how you can experience a college and a university, right? And you can balance it. And that's what I loved about Baylor is the balance. In your vision, just curious from a student life point of view, where that fraternity, sorority scene, mm-hmm. some may think that's not important, but I think it does provide a balance. Just curious your perspective on that.
Sure. So once we fully roll out the plan, there's a whole section of goals. They're actually embedded with the academic themes, but around kind of student life and spiritual development and leadership development in context of student life. So obviously our Greek system is a big part of that student life. We have a fairly high percentage of our students are involved in some shape or form in Greek life. So it is very important to us. We continue to look at how we can strengthen Greek life. As most anyone is probably aware, there's been a lot of problems in Greek life around the country. In recent years, we've seen a number of universities that have closed down their Greek life systems completely for periods of time as they've looked at issues. There's been multiple deaths over the last year through Greek life. A couple of things we're doing, which goes a little bit beyond your question, because it's an important part of what we want to do. We want to make sure we have a healthy Greek life system so we don't have those kinds of issues and problems. So two things we're doing that are related to this. One, we're doing an overall kind of review of our student life system. We brought in some outside folks that are looking at student life generally. Are we structured properly? Are we doing the right things? We're looking at our student conduct system, those kinds of things, to make sure we're really doing it as well as we can, particularly in the context of being a Christian university. Second, though, we've actually got another set of consultants that we're waiting on the report, that have looked specifically at our Greek life system, particularly around health and safety and wellness issues, to say, are we doing things right? Are we doing everything we can to educate and prepare our young people to be healthy and safe within our Greek life system and to get the benefits from it without having some of the negativity that you've seen at some other places? And so that report will be coming back. We're going to have that report before our May board meeting, so that will be presented to our board. So we're deeply committed to that system being healthy and successful at Baylor. We're putting resources into understanding if we're doing it as well as we can, and if not, what we need to do to make it better. Because we don't want to get to the point like some other universities have that have had to close those down. We have closed down fraternities, and I don't think any sororities, but we've closed some fraternities, and we have some off campus right now. And we hope that at some point we can get those back on. But those are some of the things we're working on, and want it to be a healthy and thriving system that does the leadership and service development that is really what the intent of that system is.
Some other questions? Yes, sir.
I am Michael McFraser. I am a 91 graduate, 93 graduate, both undergrad and master's degree in the area of music. Yeah. I wanted to, you spoke briefly about surveys, climate survey that you did dealing with diversity. Mm-hmm. So I certainly want to ask, you may be still formulating your plan, uh-huh. But what is the plan to diversify faculty, administration, and create an environment where students of color have a positive experience? It was a little different when I was there, mm-hmm. and you've made strides regarding diversity, but continue to do so. It's going to be beneficial for students who are coming.
Yeah. No, thank you for that question, Michael. And he's a university administrator, so he has good knowledge in this area, and we might get you to lead the Baylor line at the end, since I know you have some level of musical talent. I don't know if it's singing or not, but we might let you lead the Baylor line at the end. So, you know, diversity is an area we have work to do on our campus. We're certainly not alone in that. We have made great strides in student diversity. Our freshman class last year was 35-ish, 36% diverse. We think this next year's class will be similar. We've been in that range for the last few years, so our student body is getting more and more diverse. We've got work to do on the staff and then more work to do on the faculty side of things. So several things. We've reconstituted our diversity council on campus. We're bringing some students on it. We're bringing more a broader set of faculty and staff onto it. When I got here, our diversity council was like 95% female. Okay, and I think it was because those were the people that really cared about diversity and wanted to talk about diversity, but that's not actually a very diverse diversity council. And so we're working on the makeup of that group so that we really have good broad representation to address the issues. We're working on, we do a ton of training around sexual assault, sexual violence because of what happened. We don't do as much training as we need to and development kind of work around diversity issues and how do we live in a diverse community in a respectful and engaging way. So we've got to work on some of those, and that's some of the work that we're doing, and whether it's developing our own training or finding some out there that's really good. On the faculty side of things, we've created an opportunity hire program where out of cycle, if departments find really great diverse faculty, and diverse may mean different things in different departments depending on what is or isn't diverse in that department, and encouraging, we've set money aside for that, and encouraging departments to bring people forward, even if they find them out of cycle, even if we don't happen to have a position in their department. If we think we can bring in a really good, diverse faculty member, we want to do that. We've got to diversify our administration. We have 13 deans and one female, and the rest are males, and no ethnic diversity. We have wonderful deans. They're doing really great things, but over time, as as we have opportunity. We've got to work on the diversity of that group. Senior leadership team, my president's council, we have 11 people in that group. We have 4 women, so that's good, but we have no ethnic diversity. So, you know, we're in the process of doing these searches for provost and CBO. We have pushed the search firms and the search committees to bring us a diverse pool of people. And I think in both of those, the folks we're going to bring to campus, there is diversity at different levels and different kinds of diversity in those pools. So that's going to be a good thing. And, you know, I think faculty committees are talking a lot more about it. We haven't finished our faculty hiring process this year, but my understanding is that of the faculty that we're going to hire this year that will come next fall, it's a much, much more diverse pool of hires than we've seen in the past. And it's going to, our needle, you know, you can, because we're low on diversity, that needle's going to move quite a bit next year in terms of percentages because we're low. So that just shows me that people are paying more attention to it, being more conscientious. So that's a little jumping from place to place, but those are some of the things we're doing. We've got to continue to have more focus and more strategy around that, and that's what our diversity council's working on for us. One of the positions that we're getting ready to hire is a associate or assistant vice president of equity that will oversee our timeline office, our EEOC office. They'll work with our access and learning accommodations area. We'll work with our diversity council. So bring us some strength in working on all these areas of diversity that we need to on our campus.
Let me just also say that it's risen to the level of the board as well,
yeah.
Michael, and the board is working on diversity as the staff and the faculty are as well. And one of the changes, Doug, that came about with the reform was to create a region selection task force, and Doug's involved in that very closely. And we've asked them, we've made a request, as they look at sending names now to the nominating governance committee of the board to look at diversity. And we want to do a better job at the board level, just as well as at the faculty and the staff level for the university.
One thing I will add, this is just a statistic. What is it, Jason? About a third of our faculty, couple hundred of our full-time faculty will retire in the next 5 to 7 years. So we're going to have a huge opportunity to diversify our faculty. We'll probably also add some faculty positions around our research endeavors. So we're going to have a natural ability to really think differently about what our faculty looks like, that you don't always have that opportunity sort of naturally.
Should ask a question for you. I'm Terry Lynn Neal. I'm a Baylor graduate. My parents were both Baylor graduates in the late 1930s. My dad was a Board of Regents member for 3 6-year terms.
Oh my goodness.
I'm not sure how he lasted, but he did for almost 20 years. Thank you very much for the candor on some very difficult issues of giving us more background on what we've all read and been horrified about in the news in the past 2 or 3 years. Honestly, I was horrified in the last week or so when I read about the $15 million payout to the man who in many ways covered up the problems that were occurring. I feel very shaky about this. I was offended. I appreciate the fact that, Mr. Allison, you said that was, I'm not sure why you all thought it was hard to fire some of these people, but that in light of a lawsuit, you decided it was better, I assume, to pay them off. Could you elaborate upon that a little bit? I mean, $15 million for someone who did not lead his program in the correct way, in the Baylor way. I'd like to have some more information, and I'm sure others in the room would as well.
Sure. And thank you for the question. And again, in light of confidentiality agreements and the fact that we still have lawsuits out there and everything, let me just again reiterate what I said earlier, is that we stand behind the decisions that were made. The decisions were right to do what the personnel changes we made. We were in a situation that at the time as we were going through a potential protracted litigation, a long term, and again, Coach Brawls had a long term contract that had been negotiated some time back, and it was reported on ESPN, and that contract was over $40 million contract. We felt like at the time that we did not want to subject the university, our students, and our faculty going through a long litigation, more coverage, more media, which it could have been very, very difficult. And it was the board's decision to go ahead and to settle and to move forward. And the statements were made by Coach Browse and by the university that was the recognition that there had been shortcomings and failures, and those had to be corrected. And that's what we've been working on. And that's where we are today.
All right, are there any other questions? Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Tom Cruz. I am not an alum, but I'm a parent of a brand new freshman daughter, and she loves it.
Oh, good.
And she's found her voice through the Christian message and through community service. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to ask is maybe to turn a negative into a positive. In the future, Dr. Livingstone, are you looking for some measures to implement on campus for young women to be empowered, find their voice, be proactive, maybe help these young women that come in and for recruiting so that there's a conducive environment for young ladies to come in? And again, I don't ask for my daughter because she is very happy. But as an outsider, I would say we love everything about Baylor. But that may be an area that I'm sure you all are looking at so that young ladies who are there can feel like they have a voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. And certainly a significant part of what we do with our students, male and female students, is really hoping to help them develop leadership skills and help them to find their place on campus where they have community and feel empowered in ways that help them grow in even beyond what they're learning academically. And so much of that begins from the very beginning of their freshman year all the way through. I think, our survey results on some of the climate survey things that we did, I think it's helped us to understand, I think a lot of what we've done around some of the training around the sexual violence issue has helped our community to know where they have a voice in those kinds of situations and what they need to do and where they need to go, which is a narrow part of the broader question that you're asking. The other thing that we're trying to do, and again, this is more around the sexual violence issue, but it relates to other things, we're also doing a lot with our students to get them to kind of be aware of what's going on around them and how they can help prevent things from happening if they see a situation that they think looks unsafe or looks like it could be dangerous for someone. So we're really encouraging all of our students, male and female, to stand up for their friends, to be willing to take them out of a situation, to be willing to tell somebody to stop. And so that's happening, I think, with all of our students, but I think particularly with our women in some of these situations, it's important that they feel empowered in that way. And so we're certainly looking for opportunities to do that. And I think some of the new staff we're bringing in our Title IX area, in our equity office, will help us find even new and better ways to do that. And it's not even just our female students. It is our students of color, some of our students from underrepresented groups. We learned in the climate survey that some of our underrepresented groups do feel minimized sometimes on our campus. And we have students on our campus that are not students of faith. And so they sometimes feel like they don't feel as included, which certainly isn't a way to help bring them to Christ if they're not feeling included in what we're doing. So we've got work to do in several of those areas that have come out in that climate survey. And so we're working on how to help all of our students sort of feel more engaged and included and have a stronger voice.
All right, I think we have time for two more questions. We've got one here.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Wilkinson, and I graduated in 2006, and I'm a proud Baylor alum. I cannot talk about Baylor sometime without choking up. Love it, and I know most people are like that, but I feel like over the past few years, the family has been pretty divided, and a lot of people, even my friends, have kind of like taken a pause from Baylor, kind of like I'm just washing my hands of it all for a while because it was overwhelming and, you know, not an easy time to go through. And I know you mentioned hiring an alumni kind of relations person and doing this conversation series, but, you know, there's maybe, 25,000 Baylor alumni in Houston and a couple hundred here, so you can kind of see that. I just think that we could do so much more as a kind of alumni group to get everybody back on the same page again. Do you have any ideas maybe what you might be doing moving forward? I just really want to see everyone united again because, you know, I used to feel like we had a great community here and it's a little bit divided now. So if you could expand on that.
Well, before I say anything, I'd love to hear from you. What do you think we could do to actually engage the community more and bring some of these people back into the fold, given that that's the people that you're hearing from? I'd love to hear your thoughts and suggestions on that.
Well, I, for the past 5 years, probably have coordinated all of the sports watch parties here in Houston. And so that's been really fun, except for last year.
Yeah, that was kind of
fun.
hopefully this year will be better.
Yeah, I think this year will be better. I'm still going to do it, even though I thought about not doing it. So I really think that a lot of the alumni groups in Baylor are not on the same, or in Houston, are not on the same page, like the business and the women's and the sports and the young alumni. I don't know if there's a way for everyone to have maybe like a quarterly meeting just to kind of pull everyone together, because I have friends in all these different areas and they're like, oh, we're doing this, but I didn't know about this. And so just communication in general, you know, and we were even talking before this, you know, like what can we do to get everybody back on the same page? And I just think that communication is key. This side note, don't tell my employer if they're in here, but a couple years ago I interviewed for a job at Baylor, and it was with career development in the alumni relations department, and even they didn't know exactly what all groups were going on. So communication, I would say.
That's extremely helpful, and I think part of the reason that we're integrating our kind of development and alumni relations area, they were independently reporting, and frankly, we weren't doing a good job of coordinating across those, much less within some of those areas. And so part of the reason we're integrating those is so that we do a better job of coordinating all of our activities and events and everything. And then we're really working to hire somebody to come into that alumni relations area that has experience in that, that can help us think strategically about how to coordinate those events, how to communicate better, to bring people back together. But those are great suggestions that you mentioned. And where's Dave? Dave's back there. Dave's taking notes, and that's under his area of responsibility. So we absolutely want to find more ways, both communicating in these kinds of events. I do the presidential perspectives once a week, but we also need to have more face-to-face time with people as well. And I suspect we'll continue this conversation series over time, and it'll attract different people at different points in time. But coordinating those networks is actually a great suggestion, us thinking about how we do that better. So I appreciate that.
Could I just mention something that you brought up that I think is very important? And I know when I was asked to assume the chair position, a couple of things that I felt very strongly about. Number one, after all the pain, the embarrassment, the hurt that we'd been through as Baylor family, was number one, find ways to unify the Baylor family. That was very, very important. And Dr. Livingstone and I have talked about, we've worked on ways in which we can make it back to where we were at the time of a Baylor family. Our pastor did a series last fall, and I thought he was preaching to me, Pastor. He did it on messy families, and sometimes our families get messy. But I find that everybody loves Baylor. Everybody loves Baylor. Everybody has a Baylor story. We all have Baylor stories. We all we've met our spouses. We found our calling. It's just meant so much to us. And what the Board of Regents wants to do is continue to work with Dr. Livingstone and the team. How do we continue to unify the Baylor family and to be that we think is exciting, and to really be completely behind our students and our faculty?
One last question.
Thank y'all for coming tonight. I am in my fourth year of serving as the Parents Network Leader for Fort Bend County, and my son came to Baylor in 2013 and got to experience the closing out of the old stadium in that wonderful win against Texas in the freezing cold, and then experience in his senior year the opposite. And he said to me, football was a lot of fun, but it lasted this little short period of my year. It's not what defined my Baylor experience. And I think it's those stories from those kids who are there now, and he graduated in December, had an incredible experience at Baylor in spite of the ups and downs. Yeah. And I think those stories need to be shared. Yeah. Those voices need to be heard. And as a parents coordinator, I was speaking to another one tonight. This year in Houston, we saw our participation really just really fall off. I don't have anybody from this incoming freshman class coming to my prayer groups. But we lost the first one because of the flood. We lost one in January because of a freeze, our meetings. And so, you know, I think the negativity, people may be a little bit more hesitant to get involved. And things have changed also as far as how we communicate, whereas it's coming straight from Baylor and not from us. So to me, I understand that, but I also think that's lost a little bit of the personal community, because we were a community. Yeah, but anyway, I think we all have to realize that there were mistakes made, but the kids that are there are the voice of, they show what's really important. So.
Absolutely, and thank you for sharing that. I'm glad your son had that experience. And the feedback on the communication, that's actually very helpful. But let me also thank you. We have so many parents here and around the country that pray for our students, pray for the university, and we so appreciate it. We covet those prayers. We can feel those prayers, and they make a huge difference on our campus. So thank you very much.
We are. One more question right over here. Okay.
I guess my question is, as you were going through your strategic plan, is looking at the market for undergraduate and graduate education going forward. Mm-hmm. When you see the cost of education mm-hmm. And its cost going up, when you see the level of student debt is going up, and you're seeing more and more articles about the sustainability, or maybe I should say the unsustainability of that, and you see online education, you see relationships with junior colleges and community colleges, and Baylor is involved in that as well. But I guess as you look down that 5 to 10 year road, you know, I had some clients that 10 years ago, retail box clients, didn't think they'd be where they're at today yeah. with what's occurring. So I'm just curious, as you look and do the strategic plan, how you're looking at that as well.
No, thank you very much, and that's a great question, and it's something all of us in higher education think about every single day, and our board thinks a lot about. There's a lot of pressures on higher education right now and all those areas that you mentioned. So I think that the universities that are going to be able to be successful and continue to provide really high-quality education are those that have a unique mission and are doing something that others can't do or don't do for some reason. And it's different things for different institutions. But for us, our Christian mission is a huge part of that, and particularly if we marry that with the great undergraduate education and the research focus, we will have a unique mission that will attract a set of people at the undergraduate and the graduate level that other institutions can't attract. So I think maintaining the integrity of a unique mission for a university is really, really important. I think there's also a level of scale that's important to success. I think a lot of the really small institutions are going to be the ones that struggle the most because your infrastructure cost, there's a certain level of infrastructure cost, no matter how big you are, you have to pay for it. And the more scale you get, the more you can afford to do that. So fortunately, we're large enough that we are sort of past that particular hurdle. But then I think the other thing we have to do, we've relied so much, particularly at private universities, on undergraduate tuition. And the population is declining in that pool. We've raised tuition a lot. We can't continue to do that. So that's why we have to find other sources of financial support to fund what we're doing, particularly aspirational kinds of things. You can't do it expecting that to happen with undergraduates. And so that's why we're working to grow graduate and professional education. It's not something we've put a lot of focus on in the past. We're not in a metropolitan area, which is where a lot of schools have done that and done it very successfully.
But now that we have technology, we have the opportunity to do online learning, blended learning. We have some locations here in Houston for our social work school, for Truett. We have the nursing school in Dallas. We can do professional and graduate education in a way we couldn't do before that can actually help us fund some of our aspirations. And then, you know, we really have to do a better job from a fundraising perspective on our endowment. We are very under-endowed for the size of institution we are and for the quality of institution we are. And so well-endowed schools will be able to make their way through the future much, much more successfully. That also helps keep down the cost of education because you have scholarship dollars and you can fund research and faculty off of endowment and not have to do it off of tuition. So we have to find new revenue sources. One of the things we're asking our new chief business officer to do when we bring that person on board is to say, sort of outside of the academic programs where most of our revenue comes from, how else could we leverage the assets of the university to create revenue opportunities? I know Bob's involved in our angel network, and we've got a lot of technology and research that could potentially be commercialized at some point. We've never really thought about that as a potential revenue source, and we've got to build an infrastructure that allows us to do that. So those are a few thoughts in regard to that question.
Thank you all so much for your time this evening and for your good questions. And thank you, Dr. Livingstone and Mr. Allison. We appreciate the candid conversation here today. So thank you all for being here. And we wish you traveling mercies tonight. Thank you for your love, your care, and your support and your prayers for Baylor University. And remember to let your light shine.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.